Welcome to Middle School Walk and Talk, a podcast series offering heart, hope, and health to members of our middle school communities. Hosts Phil Svegel and Jessica McGuire talk all things self-care, student well-being, school culture, and more. Middle School Walk and Talk is designed to support the concepts found in the successful middle school, This We Believe, and is a production of the Association for Middle Level Education. To learn more, visit amle.org. Today's episode, Back to Mental Health Basics, with special guest, Anitra Warrior.
Welcome back to the AMLE Walk and Talk podcast. Today, we are with Anitra Warrior, and Anitra is from Lincoln, Nebraska, and she is the owner of Morningstar Counseling. Welcome, Anitra.
Thank you. It's good to be here. So right before we started the podcast, we were having a really animated conversation, and I said, wait, let's not talk about that anymore because I want to have that conversation on the podcast. You work with the Native population in Nebraska, mm-hmm. and a lot of your work going into schools and helping school counselors, helping other educators, relates to helping them understand the needs of the Native population.
Yes.
And it really struck a chord for me because when I think about middle schoolers and I think about identity, I think about the fact that it almost doesn't matter what the identity is. Anything that sets them apart as different is going to be hard for them in the context if they stand out as different in any way. It doesn't matter if it's because their family structure is different, their socioeconomics are different, it's religion, it's race, sexuality, anything. And I feel like there's so much that you can share about how to support Native students that will also apply to other students who are dealing with those same kinds of challenges. But I'd love to hear what you have to share about that population in particular and their needs and how we might be able to take those lessons and apply them to all students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. So again, thank you for giving me the time to be here and to share. I think there are a lot of things that we can take into consideration just when it comes to brain development in general. So when we're thinking about middle school, I shared this morning in my presentation, thinking about the personal fable. I'm the only one who has gone through this. That's a major stage of development that we see with our middle school students. Also, imaginary audience. Everyone is looking at me. So these are things that are already going to be in place for them in terms of just how their brain is working. But then when we start being separated by culture, by cultural practices, how those things do not mix well sometimes at schools, that can make things even more challenging for our students. So when I presented today, it was just called Back to Basics, and it wasn't really introducing anything new. It was like, wait, let's just take a step back to remember where our middle school students are in terms of their development, their brain development, how they interact with one another, and then of course what social media is doing to us and for us, not just to us, but for us as well. But then when we look at the Native population, there's so much to take into consideration in terms of getting to know the students, how you establish a relationship. Even as a psychologist, there are things within my work that don't align with what our guidelines are. And so one example that I usually share is within my culture, it's very common to give away. It's respectful to not receive those gifts. In the counseling setting, it's supposed to be a very low amount gift, you know, so like I can give you a candy bar or something like that. Within our culture, they're very expensive gifts. I mean, things that will cost a few hundred dollars that we're giving away. We give those away intentionally. We receive those intentionally because that's part of the culture that celebrates them, that honors them in the work that they've done. In a typical clinical setting, you wouldn't be able to do that. This is a practice that we share with our teachers throughout Nebraska. It doesn't matter, it doesn't have to be expensive, but take that time to give something to your student to honor them in that space that they're sharing with you, and that helps make connection.
Can you give an example of what that might be or what some teachers have done?
Yeah, so we actually support that. Whenever I do presentations for our teachers throughout Nebraska, I will literally take supplies for them to just create things. And even just something handmade, but think of a student that that you want to connect with, that you're trying to establish a relationship, and you can tell them, I was at this conference and I thought of you and I wanted to share this with you because this is where I hold you in my heart, and recognizing that. And now we're related, we're connected. That's so huge, because there are so many reasons for Native people to not trust the school systems. We can go back to the boarding school era, you know, and I've recently, we had another discovery of children's bodies in Nebraska from Genoa Boarding School in there in Nebraska, as I mentioned. And we had people that came to our community forum that were literally shaking from their time in boarding school and what they had experienced. This is the educational system. These people that came in that were having these reactions are also raising children going to school. Mm. That's going to be passed down from generation to generation. The other piece that we had talked about before the podcast started was just the differences in terms of when we think about absenteeism, why we're missing school. Are we going home for traditional events? When we think about our families, there's unfortunately a level of what we could say is chronic grief, because our families are so large. And my cousins are all my brothers or my sisters. I have more than one dad based on who my dad's brothers are. I have more than one mom based on all of my mom's sisters. And don't forget, this includes my mom's cousins as sisters who will also be my mother. So there's so much that comes into play when we're talking about who are we as cultural people as well. And that's important for our health and our well-being. That's why I came into this field. I had worked with a therapist, a couple of therapists, in response to my own grief, but as I was sharing my cultural practices, those were pathologized. It was almost like they were trying to medicate my culture. And so the healing space of the counseling room was not safe for me. I could not be a Ponca woman. I could not be a Native person in this setting. I had to make myself fit who the counselor wanted me to be, how the counselor identified healing and success for me, not me. It was all about what her agenda was in terms of healing. That's where we can see our worlds collide when it comes to our Native students being successful in a society that, you know, we've had some struggles with, you know, when we think about history, there's been a lot of trauma there. So it's, again, the collision of those two worlds.
What are some questions, and it might apply to Native students, it might apply to students who are new to the country or to the community and have different cultural practices. What are some questions that teachers can ask that are safe but that show genuine care and will help them elicit the kind of responses that will make that student understand that they want to know more about their background and support them?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and that can really range depending on where the student is, how much they want to share, and how enculturated they are. Because I'm speaking in general in terms of students who are connected with their culture, but we have several, you know, who aren't connected with their culture at all and don't want to be, and that's completely fine. Starting off with just having discussions about where they are, and it could even be what are some things that you like to do from your culture that maybe you don't have now? How can I support you in that? That can be a huge way just to get started, to just ask them, what are some things that you like to do? Because you're going to get those cultural components from that based on whatever their practice is, whether it's this is what we do over the weekends, this is how we have fun, this is what our family makeup looks like. That's going to be telling you what's happening within their culture.
Over the last 4 years, I think educators everywhere have heard that they need to take care of themselves in the term of self-care. And I don't know that there's a deep understanding of what that could be or what that should actually look like. Can you help us understand some ways in which we as educators can take care of ourselves so that we can best serve the students?
Yes, I am so glad you asked that because I think for me as a psychologist, I struggle with how much of a social fad self-care is. There's not a real understanding of what self-care is supposed to be. And I'm really trying to push educators, all professionals, are, you know, even within our own field, to move away from the term self-care, which is still valuable. There's still validity in that term, but really thinking about this in terms of personal sustainability. That's more more of a way to describe or capture what we're trying to make happen. In order for me to sustain myself in my career, I have to have ways in which I take care of myself. And so self-care would be a portion of personal sustainability. And when we think about this, there's going to be these basically dimensions of well-being. So how am I sleeping? What am I doing in terms of prevention with medical issues? Am I going to, you know, these prevention appointments to my medical doctor regularly? Even my dentist, am I going to my dentist regularly? What am I eating? Who are my colleagues? Who am I connecting with? Social interactions are going to be huge for us, but having social interactions with people that we can trust, that we can say, you know what, I don't like this student, and I'm having a hard time connecting with them, and they drain me, and it being a safe place to share that. They're not being judgment there. That's so important for us to be able to have. And humor, that might sound simple, but it is so powerful for us to be able to have that and have that release. And when we're able to share the challenges that we're having with students, it's not tension that we're having to guard, because that's taking extra energy. When we share openly and honestly with someone we can trust, that's going to reduce that tension that we're carrying, and then we're no longer having to really walk on eggshells when we're around this student. It helps that relationship not be so draining for us. So those are just a couple of things in terms of really focusing on our personal sustainability.
When you're talking about the different dimensions of that personal sustainability, I'm thinking about all of the staff at my school. As the leader of the school, I'm specifically thinking about onboarding new teachers. When you're talking about, you know, how are you taking care of yourself in terms of your own health care, I think a lot of we have new staff that are also new to the community. Mm-hmm. And it led my mind, I guess, down thinking, how am I, as the leader of the building, helping them understand even how to seek those things out for themselves? Because a lot of times our new teachers are out of college, and it's the first time or first few years they've lived away from home. And so I think they might even need some different and maybe some very particular support in how to even line up those things for themselves.
Yeah, you know, and that can start with the orientation process.
Yes.
And what is the policy within our orientation process? For me, as someone who has a private practice, I have a lot of flexibility in the policies and procedures that we put in place. Our orientation process is about 6 weeks. So not feasible, you know, necessarily for teachers or other clinics. But for us, it's so important that you know the community, that you do volunteer work in the community. You have to know who you're serving. You have to understand the resources that are available in these communities. You also have to know the laws, because for our community specifically with the reservations, we have tribal codes because they're sovereign nations. Mm-hmm. So there are nations within the state of Nebraska that have different laws. Sometimes they don't always align, and so our license is governed by the state of Nebraska, but when we're on their land, we still have to follow their laws. You know, so it's a tricky balance. But where I'm going with this is the orientation process, and how are they being integrated into the community to know their students. So that could, you know, maybe be a part of the process. Like, this is going to be some homework, but we're going to ask you to identify, and then we're also going to support you in identifying resources and supports for yourself, but also for the students, so you know who they are and what's available.
I love that, because it also acknowledges that some of the need stems from the fact that they don't even know what they don't know.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. They don't even know what it means to go make their own appointments if they need to see a therapist. Mm-hmm. Let's say that might be something they have never done in their own life, depending on what their family background is or their culture. And by having them go out and explore and identify those resources and framing it as being for students too,
mm-hmm.
you're enabling them to see what other possibilities might be, which I really like that. It brings to mind also the researcher, Sanaya Luthar. She was a professor at Columbia, and I always share the advice that she once gave me about self-care, broadly self-care, mm-hmm. that the best thing you can do for self-care is identify one person in your life with whom you have a meaningful, authentic relationship, and literally ask them, will you be my go-to person? And talk to them for 1 hour once a week without fail. And that in her research was the most effective way to preserve a teacher's well-being. Mm-hmm. Fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. It's connection.
I love that. You know, I just listened to a snippet from Kerry Washington, the actress, and she was talking about being in therapy at different points all throughout her life. And the response that she got was, well, does that mean that therapy actually works if you're continuing to go? And she's saying, it absolutely works. This is like training for me. The same way I continue to go to the gym and work out, you don't stop. You keep working out to have that mental fitness. That's what therapy is. But it's not, it doesn't have to be just therapy. You're right in terms of it being a connection with a safe person that you can share openly with. That's a form of mental wellness, of mental fitness.
We interviewed a superintendent, Dr. Darrell Williams, earlier today, and he shared with us that when he goes and checks on principals, when he was a superintendent, he recently retired from that position, he would ask principals, who loves you? Mm-hmm. And they would look at him like, huh? And he would say, it's not the world language teacher, it's not the associate superintendent, it is... Who is that person? And, you know, they would drill down to their family, their partner, their children. And his point was, you're replaceable at work. No one else will look out for you the way people who love you do. So be very judicious about what kind of feedback you internalize, mm-hmm. and be really liberal when it comes to reaching out to the people that you know have your back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just a variation, I guess, on what Dr. Luthar was saying.
I like this in not taking everything literally, or even just what you're willing to take in, what you're willing to give space to. In my presentation this morning, I shared a little comedy skit with how, you know, our middle schoolers are really kind of rough with us and what they share and being brutally honest and sometimes not so honest, but just that we can, as we're going through the motions, we can really give that more space than it deserves, you know, in our hearts, in our minds, we give that. And so not filtering that out and going back to what I mentioned earlier in terms of remembering where they are in their brain development and things. And so having those support systems to say, you know, this little stinker said this to me today and I almost let it upset me for the whole day. But being able to just share that and have a safe place again to have that connection and without judgment. I cannot stress that enough how important that is. So thank you for sharing.
Well, it really just goes along with what you started out saying, that self-care is just a part of it. Mm-hmm. Some of it is being really careful not to take things to heart that aren't that important. Some of it is making sure you're spending time with people who really love you, mm-hmm. and spending less time worrying about people who are playing a very fleeting role, mm-hmm. in the course of your life. Some of it might be all the going to the dentist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And some of it is trying to connect with people by understanding where they're coming from so that you don't personalize things. You had shared with us before we started recording something that I thought was really interesting. You said that in your culture, it's not typical for you to be the one to share your thoughts, to voice your ideas. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how that might show up in students?
Yeah, exactly. Especially with our female students, you're going to see this a lot. But then even with our younger students in general, one of our cultural practices, at least specifically for my tribe, is that, you know, our women don't typically speak in public. And it's either going to be an elder who will speak on my behalf. I'll, you know, share my thoughts, my emotions with them, and they'll convey that. otherwise it's going to be a male relative, a veteran. But we have specific people who will speak for us. That's an honor for them to be able to convey my messages, to convey what's on my heart. That's an honor for them. So it's not disrespectful to me as a woman to have someone do that. But when I grow up that way, I learn this as a very strong cultural belief, and then I come into a Western school system that's wanting me to speak up, that's wanting me to give presentations, that's wanting me to be very assertive in my approach to show what I'm learning. It doesn't fit. And again, we run into that collision of the two worlds that can be really a difficult struggle. So a lot of times you will see Native students, depending on their culture, you will see a lot of Native students who are going to stay more in the background because we're there to learn. We're there to be silent and take this information in and then process it and apply it in ways that are going to be appropriate for our lives or how we need to use those. But that's the cultural teaching piece of it, not the assertive approach that we can see.
And if you don't know that and you're the teacher, you might think they don't understand. Mm-hmm. You might not recognize how important it is to that student to show that they're bright and that mm-hmm. they have important ideas to share. Mm-hmm. And if you fail to wrap your mind around that, then you're not going to come up with alternative ways for them to show you what they know, and you're not going to connect with them.
Right.
Which in turn is going to make it more stressful to teach them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Even the feedback in general with the one-on-one. So I know I'm making steady eye contact with the both of you, but if I was in my tribal community, I would not be looking at either of you directly. That would really come off as like confrontational mm-hmm. with me doing that. Or I may be just sitting with my head down. And when I'm sitting with my head down, typically that's letting you know I'm really focused on what you're saying. If we have someone mm-hmm. who's getting up and saying something very important or very close to their hearts, it's very common to just see us just go down. That is interpreted by me as they're listening, they're respecting what I'm saying, they're not letting anything else come in except what I'm sharing. But if I do that in school,
it's
no,
considered
put
disrespect,
your head up,
maybe.
Please listen. Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
Again, that
fascinating.
That collision of the two worlds.
The students are so lucky to have you translating for them.
Thank you.
Yes.
It must be very frustrating for them.
It can be. It definitely can be. It also can be really frustrating for families because when you're getting the call that your student's not engaging in class, my student's being respectful. And, you know, it doesn't always come across appropriately, even though teachers are trying to do a phenomenal job in terms of reaching out, having very good connections with the parents. That comes off as disrespectful from the parents. So then it's, okay, you don't respect me, you don't respect my child, you don't respect our culture, you don't understand us, you're not even trying to understand us, you know? And so it can create conflict when the teacher's reaching out and saying something negative about, or, you know, not necessarily negative, but right.
In their mind.
And just their concerns about the students and their level of engagement or their method of engagement. When it doesn't align, yeah, that creates conflict.
What would you suggest the teacher say? Let's say the teacher is concerned, doesn't know if it's a cultural issue or a learning issue or true disengagement, mm-hmm. and wants to initiate a respectful conversation that's culturally sensitive. Mm-hmm. What does that conversation look like when they call that parent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so depending on what's happening, so let's just use the example of keeping our heads down whenever we're told something. So you could call the parent, and of course we want to start off with strength, you know, just like you do with any other parent. So start off with those strengths and then highlight some of the behaviors that we're seeing. So I notice that when we start talking about these things that they put their head down and they seem really quiet, is that something that they do at home? Is that something that you all do? I'm just wanting to get an understanding of the behavior. So it's not, they're not engaged, they're disengaging, they put their head down. So it's understanding the behavior rather than trying to interpret it and then share your interpretation with them. Because I'm seeing it through my lens, not opening the door up to have other understandings of what's happening.
Something we say at my school to help teachers with those conversations is to stay curious.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps you, I think, away from judgment. Mm-hmm. And when we stay curious and we seek the answers from a parent in this case, I think you have you then get the deeper understanding of why things are happening. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I love the language you chose, because yes. phrases like "I've noticed," "I've wondered," you are letting go of that judgment. Mm-hmm. And you're approaching them with some humility. Mm-hmm. I really just want to understand. Mm-hmm. Help mm-hmm. me understand your child. You're the expert in your child's life. Mm-hmm. And my job is to make sure that they're enjoying class, that they're learning, that I'm giving them whatever supports that they need. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It applies to any student, really.
Right, exactly. Any student. Any student.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap up the podcast, is there any last piece of advice or anything that you want to share with the middle school educators out there, whether it relates to mental health or middle school or psychology or the Native population?
Oh, there's so much I could share.
Any parting words of wisdom?
I really do want to push the term personal sustainability and really encourage teachers to, or educators to, really focus on that, and also just give thanks, because as a psychologist, what I give those reminders, and you know, I'll say it's back to basics, so I'm not giving anything new. We're just going to revisit where adolescent brain development is, and this is such a challenging time when we're talking about our middle schoolers. Earlier today, I shared what symptoms of depression might look like, what symptoms of anxiety, PTSD, what all of these things look like. And then I put typical behaviors that you can see from a middle school student. And guess what? Everything overlapped. You could see the exact same thing. So we talked about the intensity, frequency, and duration of these things that we're seeing. We know our students so well that we, if something comes up, okay, how long is this happening? How long are they staying in this? Maybe this particular mood, how often is it happening? That's going to tell us information. And so just recognizing, I think that's the biggest piece, is recognizing those signs and going back to where they are in their brain development, I think is just key for us. Because as we're going through the motions, we're getting all this input from admin, from parents, from the students, you know, it's like, we got to get things done. Sometimes we can lose sight of those basic things, you know, like, this is what I should be expecting from this student, though. And these are going to be some things that, you know, we can work through. But this is where we are right now. And this is exactly where they're supposed to be.
Anitra, you're doing some really important work. And I want to thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.